history, but May is expected to survive today's no-confidence vote. May said it's not time to change leadership with the looming March deadline for Britain to exit the European Union.
Today, as we look ahead to today's vote, backing the government today will enable us to find a way forward on Brexit and on the issues, as she says, that matter at home, and ensure that this country has the government it needs to take it forward, to deliver on the referendum.
Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn said May had shown she's not capable of leading the nation at this critical time.
Nothing demonstrates the sheer incompetence of this government quite like the Brexit negotiations. Yesterday's historic and humiliating defeat was the result of 2 years of chaos and failure. The Prime Minister has lost control, and the government has lost the ability to govern.
With Parliament split, there's a growing chance Britain will seek an extension to the two-year Brexit process due to expire on March 29th. It's not clear the European Union will go along. Kenya's president says security forces killed the al-Shabaab militants who staged a 19-hour assault on a luxury hotel in Nairobi that killed 14 people. President Uhuru Kenyatta also vowed to hunt down all who might have been involved in the attack.
We will seek out every person that was involved in the funding, planning, and execution of this heinous act. We will pursue relentlessly wherever they will be until they are held to account.
Day 26 of the partial federal government shutdown with no signs of a breakthrough. President Trump told supporters in a conference call the shutdown will continue for a long time if it has to. Trump also said people are impressed at how well the government is working. I'm Eileen Alfandari. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And yesterday was day two of the massive teacher strike going on in Los Angeles. Today, day three. More than 30,000 teachers at 900 schools in Los Angeles, California are on strike. Among other things, they are striking about class sizes, about the lack of nurses, librarians, and counselors in the schools to serve the students. Now, LAUSD, it's the second largest school district in the country, but it has more charter schools, according to news reports, than any other city. And the majority of them operated by corporate chains. And charter schools have expanded by 287% over the last 5 years. Now, according to reports, the taxpayers pay for these charter schools. They're publicly funded, but they're not. They're run privately, so the public, while paying for it to the tune of about $600 million a year, have no say in what goes on in charter schools. Now, an interesting development here that we'll hear about in a moment is that at least one charter school in Los Angeles, the teachers there have gone out on strike. But meanwhile, thousands, tens of thousands of teachers descended in downtown Los Angeles yesterday. Let us go to a clip from KCBS on the teachers' strike.
Are out of their classrooms with no talk schedule.
And now another group of teachers is going on strike in Los Angeles. CBS 2's Kara Finstrom is live in Little Tokyo, where a huge rally is underway. Kara?
Yeah, you can see the huge pumped up crowd that is continuing to grow out here. Take a look behind us. There is a stage that has been set up for a rally with a number of blocks shut down here in the downtown area. I can tell you the number of striking teachers and supporters have shown up. It seems similar to the size we saw marching downtown yesterday. Let's give you an overhead view now of the crowd that was shot a short while ago from Sky 2. Today these folks are chanting, they're dancing, they're raising pickets. Earlier this morning, one of the few groups of charter schools that belongs to the teachers' union, UTLA, also went on strike.
Looks like.
Teachers at the accelerated charter schools in South LA walked off the job today.
This strike that starts today here at Accelerated
is the first charter educator strike in the state of California.
Negotiations broke down here after the charter school's latest contract offer. The demonstrators told us it's tough for teachers and students to build relationships because the schools have a very high teacher turnover rate.
Our school does not offer competitive benefits or job protections, and so we just bleed teachers.
I don't want that to happen with our other teachers because they are good teachers and we really need them here with us.
The accelerated schools released a statement saying they've offered a new contract that includes a salary increase and want to work together to find a resolution. Across town, LAUSD Superintendent Austin Buettner also called for compromise in the historic district strike that started yesterday. He says he too wants more teachers and smaller classes.
Painful truth is we just don't have enough money to do everything that UTLA is asking Los Angeles Unified to do.
Tens of thousands of striking teachers and supporters marched from Grand Park to LAUSD headquarters yesterday, and only about one-third of LAUSD students attended class. Buettner says day one cost the district about $25 million. And with no new negotiations yet set, the costly call for change isn't over yet.
And I can tell you, Suzanne, Peter, this crowd continuing to grow. It stretches way down the street, which has been, again, shut off while this rally takes place.
All righty, there you go. A clip from KCBS. I think that's right, KCBS. And I'd like to welcome our guest now, Deborah Raphael. She has been a teacher in the LA Unified School District for almost 20 years. She's taught thousands of students from kindergarten to eighth grade, and she has had the unique opportunity to be a classroom elementary teacher. She is now a middle school teacher where she teaches elective theater arts classes. And she is a proud graduate of LAUSD, graduating from Hollywood High Performing Arts Magnet. Deborah Raphael, thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so Deborah, tell us, I always start by asking, what is the mood among the teachers that you're in touch with? And I also wonder if you're seeing a support from community members, non-teachers coming in for this strike?
Great question. I think right now I'm actually looking at the 68 members of my staff who are on the street corner in front of our school out there with their signs in the rain fighting for the children of the city of Los Angeles. So our mood is strong. I mean, what it will be like if this continues, I don't know, because we are working class people. We, you know, not getting paid is a huge deal for all of us. But right now, our mood is strong. We are serious. We've been through a lot. And we're at the point where we're like, if we don't get some support and some help, we're in real trouble as a society. I mean, what's more precious than our students? I don't get it personally. Why not every single person in Los Angeles isn't up in arms about the state of our schools not being funded well and not having the staff that we need? We need counselors, we need nurses, we need librarians, and we need teachers. In one of my classes, before we went on break, I had 48 students enrolled in that class.
Wow.
It's
outrageous.
Almost impossible to give them what they deserve, what they need, what our society needs. So we're in desperate times.
Absolutely, in desperate times. And, you know, I wanted to ask you to, Deborah, just give the public, give our listeners a sense of what that means. When you have a class size of 48 students, what is the impact of that on you and on the students that you're trying to teach?
Well, when you have big classes, you're dealing with that many more issues. So you're not getting time for instruction. If you have 48 kids and they've got, you know, they're not feeling well, they don't have pencils, they're crowded, they're bumping into each other, the learning, the stuff that we need to be doing is constantly interrupted. for us as teachers and for the students themselves. It's uncomfortable because a lot of these kids need, they all need, all children need individual attention. All children need to feel like they're important and that what they're learning matters so that they are inspired to go out and make something of their lives. And if there's 48 kids in a class, especially the quiet ones, especially them, they get very little attention, if any, because you're, as a classroom teacher, you're only dealing with the ones in the class that are behavior issues because they take up so much energy and time, and you're not going to have those same behavior issues if you've got a class of 20, 25. The teacher has a lot more opportunity to really bond with her students or his students, has an opportunity to get to know those students individually, to help them directly with their instruction, depending on what they're working on, whether it's math or English. I teach the arts, and to me, it's paramount that children leave school inspired every day to want to have an exciting, interesting, curious, authentic life. And if they're depressed and miserable because they feel like they don't count, what's going to happen? We already see it. I don't have to say it. We see it. We have a mass amount of school shootings. We have suicide is epidemic among teenagers. I mean, our teenagers are killing themselves.
Oh my goodness.
We have to be out, every single parent, every single community member in Los Angeles, all across the country, needs to wake up and say, hey, we need to invest in these children. Forget your, you know, $150,000 car. That same money, that same energy needs to go into these kids, because, you know, people that are sending their kids to private school and can afford it, that's great. But the kids at my school are going to be living in your, this society with your kids. So they all need to be educated. They all need to be treated with dignity and respect. I mean, I'm very passionate about it because I'm a parent and I'm a community member, and we can do better. We live in, I think it's the fifth richest economy in the world, in Los Angeles. Right down the street from our school are studios where an actor who works for a day makes more money than the school teacher that day, where the grip that is adjusting the lights, and I love my grips, I love my actors, these are my people, but they make more money than a school teacher. Where's our priorities?
Absolutely.
So those are some of the feelings that I think we're seeing. And we're not asking for, we know we're not going to be financially comfortable as teachers, but we need a living wage, especially when you live in one of the most expensive cities in the world.
Yeah, and I mean, I could hear in your voice how strongly you feel about this, and you know, it is very emotional for a lot of people. I mean, I'm a mom, and the way that children are devalued, and also those who care for children are devalued.
Yes.
Mothers
yes.
are not valued. Teachers are not valued. Those who care for children are not valued. And what does this say for society? As you say, other things are a priority other than caring and teaching for our most precious resource, which is our children. You know, I also wanted to ask you as well about the impact of, well, first of all, on the whole caring level. I mean, it's shocking that there are not nurses in schools. What happens when a child gets sick in the school? What happens now in schools where there isn't a nurse and a child gets ill? What is the procedure?
The teachers handle it, or the office staff handles it. So if I'm a teacher, and I can tell you it's daily, this child has a headache, this child's stomach hurts. Some of them, you know, they're dealing with a lot of changes, especially the middle school level, acne, things like that. So they have questions, and they want to have a person that they can talk to and get some support from. I can't be dealing with, you know, trying to help you with your acne problem when I'm trying to, you know, teach instruction on Shakespeare or reading and writing or math. That's just something that a nurse, a trained professional in that area, should be dealing with. I see a lot of anxiety attacks, so the teachers are dealing with that rather than sending a child to a nurse. Plus, you know, these kids, they're kids. They're running. They're jumping. Their bodies and space move differently than an adult because they're still learning how to maneuver through a hallway. They get hurt all the time.
Oh,
they
this
hurt
is so
others.
Sad. Yeah.
And it's a problem. Yeah, there's not enough school nurses. Plus, you know,
what about counselors also? Because you talk about the suicide rate. I mean, increasingly we know that there seems to be practically an epidemic level of emotional and mental issues among teenagers, right?
Yes.
For me,
this is the biggest and most critical issue that we are facing. Currently, my principal will be hiring a third. But right now at my school, we have two counselors for over 1,000 students.
Wow.
If you think about that, that means the child who is sitting in a classroom that is suffering for the multitude of reasons doesn't get a chance to really talk to their counselor because the counselor is constantly dealing with scheduling, and then the counselor really only sees the ones that are extremely getting in trouble. Because, you know, those are the... And when you're a kid that is in crisis, it's not one time to the counselor. You need constant, sustainable...
Support.
And consistent support.
Mm-hmm.
So for me personally, that's my biggest issue. I think at any time during the day, if I see a child in need, I should have no problem having multiple adults on campus that are trained, well-trained, to help that child navigate life so that they don't leave the school, go home, play Fortnite, and then think about who can I shoot up because that kid pissed me off. You know, I mean, kids are killing other kids in school. As a teacher, I'm scared.
Yeah, and Deborah,
ridiculous.
The other thing about this, too, I mean, yesterday, the guests we had on yesterday, we talked a little bit about this because what has happened is that LAUSD, the majority of students are students of color. Only about 10% or so of the students are, you know, white students. You know, they've gone off to private schools or whatever, perhaps to charter schools, but largely private schools. So a lot of those children, particularly those coming from inner city areas, you know, are facing all kinds of economic and emotional trauma on issues of race, issues of worry about immigration, financial pressure on those families, mothers or a caregiver not being in the home because they're holding down one or two or three or four jobs, you know, just trying to keep a roof over their head. And increasingly, we see a huge percentage of those children being homeless. So all of that then comes into school, comes into the classroom, and teachers are expected to deal with all of this without support. Meanwhile, you have millions of dollars going into charter school, and you also have this over $1 billion reserve fund that's sitting there and not going to our most precious resource, our children. Just, Deborah, your comments on that.
Yes, absolutely. It's crazy. A reserve should be used this minute to fund our schools, to make sure that we have plenty of nurse, counselors, teachers, librarians, support staff, security. You know, I teach theater. I did a play a few weeks ago. I had to have a bake sale to raise the money to pay for the security guard. That's what I had to do my bake sale for. Not costumes, not props, not more learning material, a security. Because that's we have to have security at the schools. So, this is it's another pressure on the teachers. You talked about parents having multiple jobs. I also have multiple jobs. Mm. I have a master's degree. I have 98 postgraduate units.
Wow.
I'm working on my third credential, and I also have to do. I also have
outrageous.
To have two and three additional part-time jobs in order to make ends meet, and that's most of the teachers.
What a
so we have teachers dealing with trying to stay financially afloat, dealing with children that are in dire circumstances.
Our children are in trouble. Yeah,
in trouble, and if and we are the ones that are going out and teaching the kids. Every adult in Los Angeles should be on the street corners thanking us for teaching these kids, for dealing with their issues, for trying to make them the best human beings that they can be so that they can go out into society and contribute. But instead, we are disrespected, we are looked down on, we are underpaid. So I have a lot of feelings, and we all do. Have these feelings. And I think it's a racial issue. I think there's racism involved. When you have a majority of your population who are of color not getting the same quality of education as the child, you know, 20 miles away in a little another part of Los Angeles, I think that's racism, personally.
Yeah, and I will happen to agree with you. We are going to have to leave it there, Deborah
okay.
Raphael, but I will say that your passion really comes across, and it explains tens of thousands of teachers and rallies in the rain in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Angelinos
yes.
tend to stay home, you know, when it's raining, and also the daily picket signs out there in the rain and the determination of you all. And, you know, I know that the teachers are on strike for a number of reasons, but as I can't help but feel as a person of African descent that this is also a strike against institutional racism. It really
Absolutely.
Is saying these are majority students of color, and they are being disrespected, and they're not given the resources of others. So thank you so much for your sacrifice. I think this should be a national emergency. What is
Absolutely.
Going on with public schools and those at the top level of this government are trying to undermine and maybe even get rid of public education in
Absolutely.
This country. Deborah, all the best for you. Thank you for your service. Appreciate
thank
you.
Thank you, Margaret. And thank you for putting a spotlight on this very, very important issue.
Right. And we want to thank Berit Jardel for her, also a
yes.
teacher, for her help in doing this. We're doing daily coverage of the strike. So any teachers out there, any parents out there, students that want to weigh in on what's happening with this strike, please call us, speak to our assistant producer, Romero Funes, 818-985-5735, or email us at mpkpfk.org or sojournertruthradio@gmail.com. Thank you. Thank you again, Deborah.
Thank you.
All righty. We are going to take our station break now, and when we come up, we'll continue a conversation about what's happening in public education in our schools as part of our Campaigners for Black Lives series, and then Marjorie Cohn, nationally known attorney and law professor, joins us to weigh in on William Barr. Hearings are going on right now. That is the Trump nominee for U.S. Attorney General. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I may be just a foolish dreamer, but I don't care. 'Cause I know my happiness is waiting out there somewhere. I'm searching for that silver lining, horizons that I've never seen. Oh, I'd like to take just a moment and dream my dream. Oh, dream my dream.
and the great Commodores, and that song is Zoom. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, and we'd like to thank Mr. T. Teddy Robinson there with that selection. Instagram at So True Radio. We're also on SoundCloud, and in the go on SoundCloud, look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott, and all of our shows are archived there, by the way, so you could hear some of our back shows as well. And traditionally we do a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in a city in the U.S. and also internationally. Today I'd like to give a shout out to our listeners in Mobile, Alabama. That's Mobile, Alabama. And also we would like to internationally to give a shout out to our listeners in Portugal. We are now going to turn our attention to our weekly Earth Minute. And after that, we'll go to our Campaigners for Black Lives.
The National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine held a public webinar on January 8th to discuss the findings of their new report on forest health and biotechnology. The report assesses the potential of biotechnology to address threats to North American forests from insects and pathogens using genetic engineering. They concluded that many gaps in knowledge remain and found that the current U.S. framework for regulating biotechnology is not adequate to regulate the release of genetically engineered trees into forests. This report comes as researchers hope to win approval to release a genetically engineered American chestnut tree into eastern U.S. forests to repopulate the forest with them. The NAS report echoes concerns raised by forest activists, scientists, indigenous peoples, and others that it is impossible to control GE trees once they are released into forests, that there would be no way to recall these GE chestnut trees if problems arose. Pandora's box, once opened, would be impossible to close. For the Earth Minute and the Sojourner Truth Show, this is Ann Peterman from Global Justice Ecology Project.
And this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. What I'd like to do now is to introduce our guest for our ongoing series, Campaigners for Black Lives. I'd like to welcome Dr. Amir Whitaker, staff attorney with the ACLU of Southern California. Prior to joining the ACLU, Amir represented students and incarcerated youth throughout Florida and Alabama for the Southern Poverty Law Center. He has worked as a researcher with the UCLA Civil Rights Project and has written for Time Magazine and other publications. At the ACLU, Dr. Whitaker is responsible for legislation focused on education, equity, and funding. He's taught at multiple educational settings for more than a decade, held teaching credentials in several states. He received his doctorate in educational psychology from the University of Southern California. Received his law degree from the University of Miami. He is on the board chair of the Arts for Incarcerated Youth Network, a collaborative of a dozen organizations providing art programming to youth throughout LA County. Dr. Amir Whitaker, thank you for joining us.
Well, good morning, Margaret. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so the strike is going on now in LAUSD. No surprise, given all of what the undermining that has happened in our schools and the devaluation of our children, the devaluation of caregivers of children, from mothers to teachers and anyone who basically cares for children. But tell us about the particular area, because this is the Campaigners for Black Lives series, and you want to focus on the unequal art access for students of color, but also the over-criminalization of their classrooms. Let's start with the unequal art access.
Sure. So the state of California, you know, all schools teaching students grades 1st through 12th were required to offer the big four, right? Dance, visual arts, theater, and music. But what we see is, you know, most schools are out of compliance, and when it comes to Black schools, a lot of them, unfortunately, are offering zero of the arts. You know, about 43% of Black schools have visual art access compared to over 90% of white schools. So that's, you know, over twice the rate.
This is 40. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Up next is the Free Culture Radio. The Free Culture part.
No, 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 no. He's outside looking in. Timothy Leary lives. No.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm Doug McVeigh. Free Culture Radio is an examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the ineluctable, indelible, and indispensable influence of drugs on society. Free Culture Radio neither promotes the use of any drugs nor condemns people for being involved in drugs. To the extent that drug use presents problems for individuals or society, those problems are made worse and more intractable when people who use drugs are treated as others and ignored, stigmatized, and even brutalized. On this edition of Free Culture